Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's that time again. It's Empowerment Network. 365 days. Of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man Marvin Rome, co-host Stan Magley, and a crew. Oh. There is no better love than for self and kind. There is no better love. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. And it's the kind of Saturday that will make you think about a few things. It's the program to have you to concern your mind, your heart, your thoughts, your opinions, your attitudes, your actions, and your activities on what's happening in the African American community. We are creating here a collective consciousness where the NAAEA is about the empowerment of the African-American community in the United States and in all of the locations where you find people of color who are committed to working toward change. So how do we commit ourselves to change at the National African-American Empowerment Association? It is easy. It is to ensure the needs of the African-American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower us. That means you too. To commit to develop, to implement, to incorporate strategies such as politics, understanding the political system, and why you need to participate. Economic development programs that work on teaching you how to manage your money, understanding capitalism and that capitalistic economic system that continues to drive our economy, and we're at the forefront of it. Athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, that's taking care of your body, not only your physical health, but your mental and emotional health. You need to help yourself with your health. You need to take care of your body so that you can be here for another generation to share your wisdom. Many of us are in our super prime. That means we're ready to pass on the wisdom and knowledge that we had through all of the experiences that we had in this country. And when you get to your super prime, oh, it's time to lay down the wisdom. All right, and lastly, but not least, is culture and education. It's a comprehensive cultural programs, like our sister Janine Bell here in Richmond, who does a great job with the Elegbo Folklore Society. Look them up, find out what they do, and figure out how you can work with them, as well as education. That's a comprehensive education, creating a mindset to teach our kids that we can do. We are the minds. We are that group of people. We are the first computers. That's right. We are that wisdom that we have shared with the world. Before we were enslaved and Plymouth Rock landed on us, and afterwards, as we continue to show our greatness in everything that we do. But we do need to resurrect ourselves, so we need to do the work. So today our show is about something happened. Something happened. What happened to us? And as we round and went into slavery and segregation and came out of segregation, something happened. And we're going to talk about that today. So let me bring in my main man and co-host, Stan Macklin. Stan Macklin, are you there?
I'm here, Brother Rome, and it is a wonderful joy to be again on another Saturday talking to the community at large. And let me just take time and make time to congratulate you on such a fantastic newsletter magazine, The Wisdom. I tell you, this morning I sat down with my cup of coffee and my morning breakfast, and I enjoyed the wisdom. That newsletter is just, it's power-packed. And if it is a reflection of what is yet to come concerning the production and the marketing profile of the National African American Empowerment Association, wow, I can't wait. I just want to encourage everybody, if you have not subscribed to that new, I guess it's their fall issue, please do, because it has a lot of good information in it, and The Need for Wisdom by Marvin Rome is just excellent. Excellent. You really laid it out there, brother. That was nothing but wisdom that was being spoken by you on print. So I want to encourage everybody, if you haven't gotten that issue, please make sure that you ask for it, because it is power packed and it's a great addition that is already caliber. So thank you, my brother, for that article.
Thank you, Stan, for your kind words. But again, I can't take the credit for it. It is a wonderful team and a wonderful staff of people who have committed to educating and empowering our community. Brother Booker has jumped in with his powerful skills, and the rest of the team. And you know who you are. Sister Benita put in an article to Brother Glenn and so many others. We had meetings and we planned, and all the individuals like yourself who supported with advertisement. Thank you so much. Without you, couldn't do it. So thank you again. Hey, if you want a copy of Wisdom, just email me at theempowerment@ymail.com, theempowerment@ymail.com. Thank you for that, and thank you for the Empowerment team who worked to bring our news magazine to fruition. All we have to do now is continue to work, and we can do the work of educating our people politically, economically, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, culture, and education. All right, you ready for this show? All right, so I'm gonna play a clip, and we'll just listen for a few minutes, because something happened. I want to talk about something happened today, and we'll also fire in a potluck round. But let's listen to this clip, and then we'll get into it.
In South Philadelphia, we didn't realize it was segregated. All we knew is that our neighborhood was all black, and we weren't even that conscious of color, because the people who owned the store down the street were black, the tailor, the restaurant owners, the undertaker, everybody in the neighborhood, and it was a very small street, working, everybody worked, blue collar, essentially, very close-knit neighborhood. Everyone had over 4 children. We played in the streets together. On Saturday morning, our parents came out, and the hucksters came around, and our parents purchased things. We had to go buy ice because there were no refrigerators then. We had a coal stove, so the younger kids were responsible for putting wood and coal into the stove and keeping it going. And the level of interest in education was just profound. I mean, even to this day, I don't think I've ever had such a positive educational experience that I did my first 6 years, because school was an integral part of the community. We had a black superintendent, a black principal, all the teachers were black. Many of them didn't live in the neighborhood either. Contrary to popular belief, they were middle-income people who lived elsewhere. But their hearts and their souls were into those kids. I remember that third grade and fourth grade plays were always conducted in the evenings so that parents could attend. And an auditorium that seated maybe 400, 500 people was standing room only for a third and fourth grade play. Up until 1959, 78% of all black families had a man and a woman in them. That's a fact. Teen pregnancy was looked down upon. Sexual activity among kids, everyone bragged about it. No one did it. But if someone became pregnant, if there was an aunt in the South, they would go there, so that the moral standards and ethical standards for people living in those communities was extremely high. It had little to do with your income. Many of us were poor without realizing that we were poor. During the war years, I thought everyone had one pair of shoes. Today I have a lot of shoes because of those early experiences. You know, you put cardboard in your shoes when your soles were worn out. You never went to your mother and said, "Mom, my shoes need to be replaced or fixed." You just knew that the money wasn't there for that. So you got the thickest piece of cardboard you can find and put it in your shoes. And if it didn't rain, you could last but 2 days. The discipline was in the community. I mean, you didn't speak back to an adult. The thought of an elderly person being disrespected was just unheard of. And teachers were never disrespected. And if you misbehave, you would be spanked by a neighbor. And your mother got home or father got home, you were spanked there. And God forbid a teacher should ever have to send for your parents. And they had to take off work. That was it. And so it imposed a kind of discipline. And again, it was a discipline that had little to do with how much money you made. There was a sense of comfort, a sense of well-being, a sense of oneness between the school and the community. The early days, civil rights was not an issue. The black colleges gave kids like me, a high school dropout, who dropped out 3 months after my 17th birthday, and then went into the military and got introduced to learning there, got on flying status, went to a really nice military school, learned airborne electronics, did some flying with the military, and then finished my high school education there and was told that I could to enter any college in the country because of my scores. But I lacked the kind of confidence. But the black colleges, my college, Cheney State College, I think reached out to me. It was a warm environment. It was almost a continuation of the kind of warm and accepting environment I experienced in the black schools in my native Philadelphia and my old neighborhood. Cheney was a continuation of that kind of loving experience, but it was tough. I remember I entered with 13 other veterans, and we were given some priority in admissions because it was thought that we were mature. Our grades weren't that great, and so we were placed on academic probation, but over half of us made the dean's list at the end of the first year from academic probation. Many of us who exercised leadership in the civil rights movement in the early and mid-60s, integration was never our goal. We never saw integration as a solution to the problems. We were seeking desegregation. And I think confusion on that point has continued to erode the collective self-confidence of the black community today. Just a very confusion.
All right. Let's unpack that, Stan. There's a lot of nuggets there. All right.
Man.
So what you got?
Well, you know, I grew up in that era, man. That was reality. In my particular neighborhood, it was diverse. Next door to me was some Germans. And across the street were some Middle Easterners. And everybody was employed or self-employed. There was just a cohesiveness that was there in our community. We knew each other's neighborhood and parents, and the two-parent home thing was a reality. It was just the norm. It was the standard. There was values. There was principles. And as we progressed, we've gotten away from that. Deterioration of the home and the family has eroded those principles and those values and made us such strong foundational people. And I know that. I know that. I see that. And so, I mean, that's all you knew. It was like that wherever you went. It was. And the church was involved, and the community was involved. Everybody was an activist, and you don't talk about acting up because they could deal with you right on the spot. And then you got dealt with when you got home. Education was very serious. It was paramount. And you were expected to achieve, expected to bring your homework home. It was just the norm. It was the standard. And when you have standards, when you lower standards, that's where problems come in. And the standard has been lowered so much that it's almost like we wonder, can we recapture those historic foundational values which are mm-hmm. which made us. Men, I mean, there's always some mannishness, but men had respect for women, and it was just there. It was there. It was there. As time further has evolved, now it's kind of almost in a state of crisis. But I know that it's so important, and I look at my I have some young families within my family, and they're carrying on the way we taught them, and so it's more caught than taught, and it can happen. You can't have principles, you can't have values, you can't have principles in your life. But you have to have a desire for it to take place. Any old thing just won't go. It just won't. So we got a lot of work to do, a lot of catching up to do, man, because it seems like we're hemorrhaging in a big way.
True.
So that's my thoughts, Brother Rome. That's my thoughts.
True. Thank you, brother. Any old thing won't do. So he brought out a lot of great points, and this is an interview talking about what it was like in the 1950s going mm-hmm. into the early 1960s, and he talked about community and how children played together, and it was a close-knit families and close-knit communities and the responsibility in the community mm-hmm. for one another, right, and how the principles and you know, that piece about having 400 or 500 people come to a child's third grade play is amazing, right? What happened to those days?
Oh, yeah.
So we're
going
to go to the line. What happened?
That's reality. Well,
so
we're
going to talk.
That was community involvement and community enhancement. It just was that. That's the way it was, and we just somehow got away from that. Somehow our values, they just slipped. They slipped. And where it started getting replaced by other isms and schisms.
Uh-oh.
That's what happened. Yeah.
Something happened. What happened is the question.
Happened.
Something happened to us. We're going to the line, Stan. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The Empowerment Network. We're coming to you now. I'm going to listen to us to Sound Off Time. I'm going to 4756. If you're ready to talk, we're ready to listen. It's the Empowerment Network, a safe space where you can say whatever you want to say. It's your show. 4756, Marvin Rone and Stan Macklin.
Yeah, this is Brother Warren in New Orleans. Wake up. How you doing there?
Hey, Brother Warren.
Good.
How are you?
Yeah, I was great. I didn't have a show to show today, so I said let me check out the program today, because I try to, if I'm not doing the show at this time. See, I'm on Central Time, so sometime on Saturdays I might do a show at 1 o'clock Central, which would be 2 o'clock Eastern. But what I might do is I might make it an hour earlier or an hour later or something there. But I caught the part where, now who is that speaking? Because I caught the part where they talked about, you know, school and stuff. So who was that exactly speaking again?
Okay, this is just a series of interviews that they did with African Americans about how the African American community was back in the 50s.
Okay. Let me say this. I'm familiar, you know, we all, you know, who are old enough, familiar with how our community was.
Mm-hmm.
But we're gonna have to kind of move forward, because we can't. Because, see, conditions were such that it required us to be that way. So what we don't want, of course, we don't want Jim Crow to come back, and we don't want that. So what we have to do is really create. And you have the young adults today, those in their 30s and 20s, they don't know about that. So the kids that are in school that the young adults may be teaching, you see. So you have at least three generations from those who lived in American Jim Crow. And, of course, things like the nature of work changes, how men are employed, how women's status change, they all have impact, how people are allowed to be very expressive. You know, when I was coming up, those women in the family, some of them were very, very strict. They were so strict that young girls today wouldn't have been able to live with those older women in my family.
Got that right.
Like, we kind of advocate that too much no more, you know. So we kind of have to really kind of look at ways that African Americans could be more interdependent on each other through a new concept of networking, support systems, based up on how the world is operating and functioning. Now, what's the big problem? That we all say money. So we all need money to, what, keep our head above the water. So if a single mom doesn't have money, she's not able to provide her children with the adequate education and recreation exposure that the kids need to be considered functional, developing young people. So therefore, because there's no money, there's no support, you get left behind. So this is the issue we kind of have to look at how we're gonna address. One of the things, Marvin, I look at is, you know, we as African Americans, and this is something I'm starting to develop this approach. We're really not that bad off compared to a whole lot of other people in the world today. They got white people in white countries, like Eastern Europe, got it real bad. I think what has happened to us is that we have been discussed so much in negative terms and context that we have gotten used to beating up on ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So when you say black, that becomes something with a negative perspective. Oh, we need to look at what are the very positive things going on with us, and how we can interlock and create a network safety net system for ourselves, given that the concept of the middle class is shrinking and eroding. So how can African Americans develop a concept, a vision of a safety net, considering we still live in a racist, hostile environment in this country? But too many of us, of course, younger people, look at the younger people come out of college, they work in, they get these corporate jobs, they work around white people. Many of the young people today, when they give a lecture or a talk today, they don't even have that African-American oratory style no more. You know, they sound boring like white folk. So we kind of have lost and fail to see the uniqueness of ourselves. There were some unique things about African Americans that allowed us to withstand these blows that we withstood all these generations. And once we've thrown that stuff out, we become more vulnerable to be divided, separated, and attacked. And I guess that's what we have to look at. How do we develop a vision where it incorporates the best qualities and strengths that we displayed over the generations here in North
America? That's right. Thank you, Brother Warren. Hold tight. I'm going to come back to you. Also, I do want to hope all is well down there. I know Delta came through last night, so we're wishing everything is well. Everything good down your way?
Oh, yeah, that storm landed where Laura landed, near a place called Lake Charles around up in there, which is not too far from the Texas-Louisiana border.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure y'all safe down there. Peace and blessings to you. We'll get back to you in just a minute. Man,
okay.
Warren laid it down, Stan.
Oh, yes, he did. He laid it down. It's the reality of what it was. It's what we grew up with. And I believe that if individuals would apply those principles, those good old-fashioned values to their life, it can make a difference. We have responsibility toward the next generation, and we want to be able to leave them something, a legacy of enhancement and empowerment. And if we don't do that, we have failed. We have failed the next generation. And, you know, one of the biggest admonitions was what God said to Cain. Cain said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Well, we are our brother's keeper. And we have to be open to resonate with our brother or our sister and to check in on them. And if we don't do that, that's being a part of mediocrity and selfishness. So the pattern is there, the framework is there, we just got to do it. We got to do it and model it. It's so important.
Right.
When we do that,
right.
Because we have to lead by example. And that's how the next generation learns from observing that those perspectives. So it's very important, very important. Let's hear some more from the callers. Let's see what they got to say.
All right. Hey, Warren made a great point when he said things have changed, right? We have had to evolve. Right. So there's some economic things. He pulled that piece out, right? Because economics is, which is a pillar of empowerment communities, right? Our empowerment communities come from making sure that money is there, right? Creating systems that's going to allow us to manage that. All right. I'm going back to the lines. Thank you, Warren. 9282, it's the Empowerment Network coming to you live.
Good afternoon, brothers. How y'all doing today?
Hey,
oh,
brother.
Good.
Look, I'm listening to the conversation so far today and some thoughts I had earlier in the week. And as I evolve as a person, because, you know, we always continuing to evolve, hopefully, I'm beginning to realize along the topic that you put out today, I first want to say the brother that you shared in the interview, that was me, you know, except my community wasn't integrated. It was all black folks, you know, and that was our community. And like he said, at that time, and I grew up in, you know, early 50s, I was born, and I'm telling you, at one point we didn't realize we were poor, okay? We were
That's
all
right.
good together.
That's true.
You know, we
That's
were all
right.
good together. We had unity with community, within our community. We stood by each other. We helped each other. Yeah, we had our disagreements and so forth, but it was family. It was in the, you know, it was in the community. But then I realized this week, you know, and always analyzing our situation, trying to learn from life, you know, being analytical, you know, and recalling history in my own life for the past 68 years, and I just came to the conclusion, or be able to put it out there, that we as people are in the position we are in today, having all the discussions we are having about what we should do, what has happened, where do we go. We're in this position today because, and excuse the language, because of house niggas.
Uh-oh.
Okay, and not house niggas, not just house niggas from the 50s and the 60s and the 40s and the 70s or what have you. We're in this position we're in today because of house niggas on the plantation. Okay, the first 100 years of slavery, we must understand, the first 100 years of slavery or so, we are taught, I wasn't there, so I got to add that caveat, we were taught that our people couldn't read a book. In fact, they were killed if they were caught reading, and that they knew how to read. That was a nigga that
That's
was
true.
Killed.
That's true.
So the first 100 years of slavery was house niggers teaching niggers, field niggers, how to function in America.
Mm.
So after that 100 years, we could then take the shackles off of the slaves, because now we can sleep in peace, because these niggas ain't going to be trying to break into master's house and kill him. That first 100 years, black folks, slaves, men and women, kings and queens, they were like, oh, hell no. If we get out of these shackles, you dead, goddammit. You know, no, we coming after you. They had to be watched. They had to be shackled and chained. That was 100 years time where they had to break us.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that 100 years or so, now we can let you walk freely on the plantation. Now, some of y'all might still try to escape, you know, because we got to weed out y'all militant niggas up in the group. But we're comfortable now with the situation that after this first 100 years, we've got you niggas to the point where we can take the chains and shackles off. And house niggas were like, man, boss don't like that. We can't do no, nigga, you gonna mess me up. You know what I'm saying? I got to teach you how to function around here, or I'm going to lose my life or my job. So, nigga, please. So we're in this position we are in today because of house niggas on the plantation back in slavery. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all the things, how the civil rights, during our lifetime, too, what happened, you had the Black Panthers, you had the Nation of Islam, you had the Civil Rights Movement, you had these militant groups, you know, and young folks might not understand, but the Crips came out of the Black Panthers and the Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were, as they teach us, they divided the CIA, and the American government went in to destroy the Black Panthers, and they pit black folks against black folks. They got them into these so-called gangs, and the first one, big one, became the Crips and then the Bloods. You know, but you had the Black Panthers, you had the Nation of Islam, you had Vernon Johns, you had black folks saying not integrate in the system, as the brother was saying earlier on the tape, not integration into the system. We need to separate. We need to get up out of here. There's no way we're ever going to be successful in this system, regardless of what we do economically, politically, voting, not voting, what have you. You're playing into the system. You're functioning like the house niggas have prepared you to function. Those were those militant Negroes they talked about in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s. Those were the Negroes that had to be destroyed in the Nation of Islam, running around here talking about the white man is the devil. What? That nigga out his mouth, oh, he gonna call the white man the devil. Oh, Lord, boy. You know, that's why we can't be Muslims, because that'll piss the white man off, because they call the white man the devil.
Hmm.
We
function. So how do we move forward? How do we move forward?
Well, brother, you know, we done had this conversation. We have to enlighten our people. We got to educate our people. We got to stand by the truth, what we know is the right thing. Whether you stand together with 100 people or you stand by yourself, if you got to do it alone, the proper thing out is truly knowledge. And you've got that newsletter now, brother, Wisdom. That's the only way out of this. We've got to understand. We got to get the wisdom, the knowledge, the wisdom, and above all, get an understanding. That's what we need. Mm-hmm. And all the other things are patting around the bush on it, touching on it. Well, we can't do this. We can't do this. We need money. We need this. We need this. No, you need to get the hell up out of here. But you need to understand the knowledge. And why would we try, if we say this is hell, why would we try to do things to give us a better chance in hell?
Mm.
It doesn't make sense. But we've been so conditioned, Willie Lynch and all that, we've been so conditioned to function the way we function from beginning on the plantation. That's why you can walk around without the shackles on, because we've been trained how to act and how to function in this system, in this what we call hell. You don't make hell better. You don't make your conditions better in hell. We looking for heaven. We looking for righteousness. We've got to, like we've said before, we've got to be deprogrammed. We got to be brainwashed and put knowledge back in to lift us up and inspire us to understand we gods. We're God's children. The greatness of the universe is in us. We just don't realize. We're afraid of what we can do as we come together as a people. Just visualize this, brother, and I know it's far-fetched, you know. Just visualize if every black person in this country, I'll just start here in this country, were together as one. One mind, one thought. Just look at this, and I know I'm going to get some feedback on this one, but I can't happen now because we're too late anyway. But just think what would have happened if on November the 3rd of this year, CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, all I'm reporting, tonight, not one black person in this country voted.
Uh-oh.
Think of that.
That's a whole conversation in and of itself, brother.
That's Lexi Power in there.
That's another conversation.
That would be. You know, not one voted. Not one. White folks will go crazy. Not one black person in this country voted and said, enough is enough.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to stop you right there, brother. Powerful
yes,
thought.
Sir.
That's something to think about. I will get back to you in just a few minutes. Stan.
Yes.
Brother
I support
Warren said that we had to move forward working independently, and this brother said that we need to get our minds together. That's the collective consciousness, brother. George talked about, and he said maybe we shouldn't participate at all. I know that'll stir some people up and say, well, we fought for the right to vote. But all right, what you got on that? Then we're going to move on to 0946.
Well, we become the victim of victimization, and we create a lot of our reality, and we got to stop that. We just got to. I say it time after time, without the mission and the vision of establishing our own reality, we're just fooling ourselves. So we got to get back to the basics. We must. That's what we're talking about, the basics, the ABCs. Yes, reading, writing, arithmetic of life, and we got to get back to that. Them people, they had, some of them had up to 10, 12 kids, and none of them was in the juvenile court services. None of them was breaking in, stealing little terrible gangsters in the community. They had values. They had principles. And so we know what to do. We know what to do. We got to just do it. As one program, he said, stop talking about it. Let's do it. And that's what I want to associate. I'm not going to waste my time around people that's just talking. I want to be a part of organizations like the NAAEA that's about collective consciousness and doing something to enhance our people. I mean, I go back again to this article, the need for wisdom. Brother, you laid that out. You really did. I looked at it. I read it. I said, my God, this is profound. So we need to bring it out. It comes out with us. When we put ourselves in situations where we can produce the maximum of our potential, then we enhance each other. And still, as long as we stay on the friends and not allowing the caliberness of our potential, then we're hindering ourselves. And so our maximum potential is not where we're at. It's where we need to be. And we can get there. Used to be like that. We did more successfully under segregation than this so-called, I think I'll enhance myself if I can just sit next to little white Johnny. That was a big, big failure of us and the advocates who pushed that mess. So we just got to return back to our original position and go from there.
Well, I think Brother Warren made a great point. I'll go back to him in a few minutes, that the system changed. And, you know, on several other shows, we talked about the sudden strategy, right? And so when you look at the war on drugs and mass incarceration, all of those things, the movement of jobs out of communities and unemploying the black male and even moving work out to other countries outsourcing that work. Let's go to the line, Stan. 0946, it's the Empowerment Network, Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin.
Yes, good evening. I really don't have much to add to what has been said. I think what has been said is profound, but something that Brother Warren said was that times have changed. They really have. But one of the things is someone mentioned that we do not have a standard. And it even more importantly, it's not popular anymore to have well-behaved children. See, there was time that you were a mother, having well-behaved children was popular. Today, he got ADHD, he got ADD, he got EFD, he got CCD, whatever. There's an excuse. There's an excuse for behavior. And so, in order to have an educated populace, you have to have people that have the mindset to be respectful of themselves. There was a time that being a respectable citizen was popular. Today, it's now about how much money you got, what kind of car you drive, what kind of house you live in. That's what's popular now. So it's not cool anymore to have the standards that preserved our communities in the past. That's not cool anymore. That's not, you know, that's not up to date or whatever. So until we find a way to impact the mindset around, like, you've got, if you speak standard American English, you acting white. That's unpopular. So the children that do have, that want to learn and that can learn, are demotivated by a negative peer pressure system now that says, okay, you can't be cool if you're smart. I mean, that's crazy, but it's no longer popular to be smart because now you're trying to act white. And so until we can find a way to impact the mindset and change what's cool and what's not cool. See, it was a time that it wasn't popular or cool to have a child out of wedlock. You just didn't do it. But now it's like, well, whatever, it's okay. So our standard has just dropped down to nothing. Because even though with times being changed, if we had children that knew how to go to school, sit down, be quiet, and be teachable, then the sky is the limit. But just something as basic as that, teachers can't even teach because the children don't want to wait on their turn. They don't know how to take turns. They don't know how to be quiet. Yeah. They don't know how to manage their behavior. And so just basic, simple stuff that used to be respectable and popular and cool, that's no longer cool. That's no longer cool anymore. So however we can affect that and make it something positive to have character traits that are going to take you places. And I'll end with this. One of the advantages that Nigerians have when they come to this country is they come with a mindset and they come with a discipline that no matter what the obstacles are, they're able to stay focused and they're educated and they can stay in the game long enough to overcome. All those type of skills now in African-American culture, urban culture, none of that is popular anymore. None of it is popular. If you talk any way you want to talk, act any kind of way you want, wear your clothes, I mean, it's popular now to wear your pants down to your knees. I'm sorry, I don't see the logic in that. It does, but it's hip. You know, it's the thing to do. And so the things that kids and the millennials and the young people are now interested in that makes them popular all but help us to be more dysfunctional. So I think we have to find a way to make it cool again to be literate. We got to find a way to make it cool again to have a family that's intact. We got to find a way to make it cool again to support your family and be there for your family and support the teacher. We got to find a way to make that cool again.
Well, thank you, sister. I just want to add, the question that comes to my mind then is, who's driving the culture, right? Who is influencing our culture, right? The brother said we had high moral and ethical standards, right? And it had nothing to do with money, What's driving us? Do we have our own culture, or are we influenced by the mainstream culture that drives and dictates what we do? Right, we got a whole lot of letters now for our kids, ADHD and all of those. And then we got a lot of letters for our professionals, the PhDs and the LPCs and LCSWs and M's, and they go on and on. Those letters don't, for me, articulate into success strategies. Right? What are the success strategies that we're going to use to get ourselves out of a condition? Right? If you just go into any inner city neighborhood around and see the conditions, then you'll see that now some people in our community are prospering. Don't get me wrong. But who is driving the mainstream culture for African Americans? I'm going to go, Stan, what you got? And then we'll go back to Brother Warren and see what he has. Thank you, sister. I'll get back to you in just a minute.
Well, it's the village concept. It's nothing new. It takes a village. We've gotten away from the village. It's there. It's intact. And we know how it was, and we know what's going on. And the fruits of white supremacy has just manifested itself where it's perpetual, and we have gotten away from our roots, from our very fiber of who we are, and we must return back. We must, because if we don't, it's already out of control. This senseless killing like it is amongst us is just unacceptable. And why is it that we do that? Because we devalue black life. We devalue life. And where you don't even know how to deal with conflict resolution, you think the solution is to have a gun that you pull out of your waist or wherever you pull it from and just shoot your brother till he's dead. Come on. That there.
Or we don't know. Why we don't know.
It's crazy.
The village
crazy.
Has changed, right? And when we say we don't know, right, who is driving this mentality, right? The structures, the moral fabric, the values that we had, the integrity, the personal integrity. Who's driving this? Right. Well, what do we do? Brother Warren, what you got?
I guess the attitude I'm taking now is a step back perspective. Let me say what I mean by that. We have got to be careful not to romanticize the time period under Jim Crow. Functionality there. A lot of women got pregnant. A lot of women had children from different during that time. We have to be very careful. You had all of those stuff that we see today existed, except that, of course, we didn't have a perspective of state entities offering assistance. So there was more of a will to pitch in to help. Our demographic group, we're about 40 million plus. And we have to be very careful not to make general statements about us as if it reflects everybody's situation. A lot of our young people
like
are coming
that.
Out of college. They're doing things that we should be proud of them on. We have to acknowledge that. But our demographic group has been and is continuing to be targeted to be exploited.
True.
And people are exploited when they're vulnerable, when they haven't organized themselves for power. Their resistance medicine in them kind of starts to dwindle away. And we have to understand that whatever dysfunction we identify among us, other groups benefit tremendously from it. And as a result, if they benefit tremendously from whatever dysfunction we identify, they're going to have a vested interest that dysfunctionality stays there, increases, or new dysfunctionalities appear in our demographic group. So we kind of have to understand that component. Now, black immigrant groups come over here are like any other immigrant groups. The pressures they have coming here are totally different. But after a generation or two, their young people begin to reflect the same behaviors as the white American or black American that's been here. They after two or three generations, they start to reflect that. They start to become quote-unquote American. So we can't romanticize black immigrants either, because black immigrants, like any immigrants, come here under a certain type of pressure that we don't have just by sake of being here, you know. And so that's the situation we have there. We have to look at the fact that we're like 40-plus million people. We're basically like a de facto nation. And we have to do an assessment and inventory of our de facto nation and develop solutions as if we were a nation. So, for example, we say the big problem in what we call Black America is money and employment. Then we look at what did we have as a black nation that is causing the unemployment and lack of money. Well, we don't use our disposable income to create a type of informal economy among ourselves. Why? Because we are influenced to be part of what? The mainstream American entity. So therefore, we don't think in terms like a nation. Okay, so a lot of these things have to be practical with in terms of how we approach whatever we say is the problem. But again, our identified dysfunctions, no matter what they may be, benefit other people. They love it. They love whatever it is we identify that we dysfunction about because they benefit. If immigrant groups like Arabs, Koreans, and Vietnamese make a pretty good living in black neighborhoods from black people's spending behavior, you think they want to see black people's dysfunctionalities to go away? No. Because they'll be protesting because blacks don't want to go to their stores anymore, and they think that we're supposed to go to their stores. So we have to look at when you are over people, you're exploiting people, look at how the people who are exploiting people, look at how they operate 24/7 to make sure that their victims remain in a confused state and dysfunctional behavior because they benefit. We have to look at that perspective.
Wow, thank you, Warren. That's powerful. Stan, Brother Warren said we have a de facto nation. I like that. That's a beautiful concept, right? How do we strengthen our cultural immune system? How do we begin to think as a nation, this 40-plus million people that Brother Warren spoke to? And how do we begin to, again, create institutions that define our own reality and create a collective consciousness where we begin to work together and stop being exploited? Because the exploitation, like he mentioned, does continue. What do you got, Stan?
Well, when these other people groups that have come into our communities and are profiting, they watched what the professionals have done, and they just reduplicate. That's all they do. They do it. They know that we are the most vulnerable, gullible, exploited people on the face of this earth. A friend of mine named Empty Sleeve said, "The most hated person in the world is the black woman. The most neglected person in the world is the black child, and the most hated person in the world is the black man." People, basically, a lot of these people groups, you know, they love us, but they hate us. They love the money that they're getting from us, but they hate us as a people. And we got to the place where we hate ourselves. We hate ourselves. We were self-destructive. And I know within my family, we promote positivity. We promote unity. We promote a collective consciousness. We work together. Everybody's somebody. And And so all I, you know, I quit trying to save the world. We got to quit that. We got to reach out to our, because all of us is part of a family. We got to reach out to families, because we all got some trouble spots in our family. You try to do what you can do, but if you can't, you got to move on. You got to, it's called in a business. Anybody operate a business, they know the difference between profit and loss. Sometimes you got to just count it as a loss and move on. You got to do that. And, you know, I'm just at a different place in my life. I played this thing long enough. I've been an advocate, an activist, and it's over with. It's over with. I'm back to the pyramid mentality, and that's the position that I am. I'm about universal consciousness. I'm about, as the man said, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I want to be fruitful, multiply, replenish, and to have dominion. And I can't have dominion if I'm not having dominion over what's going on in my life. And so we got to quit trying to be like everybody else and do what can be duplicated in a way that it produces results. So that's what we got to do.
All right. Let's get back to the lines. 3026 Empowerment Network, Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin, you're live.
Hello?
You there, caller? Yep.
Hello?
Hey.
Go ahead,
hey, how's it going,
you're
guys?
Live. Going well.
Hey, how's it going, guys? It's great. Yeah, so, I think that, one of the things I wanted to talk about was more of a more of solutions. I just left a really good guy in the community who does West Philly produce. He's doing something terrific. He's using the youth because in the community there was a lot of drugs, and he bought a plot of land.
Yeah.
And use his own money to build a produce store, and started hiring the youth to work there.
That's it.
You know, and I think that that's where we need to go as far as solutions, because if not, if we just sit here and talk about the problems all day long, we're not going to go nowhere.
True.
You know, and I think what he's doing, his name is. His name is Arnett Woodall, right? What he tried to do is, it's catch a lot of the, you know, before guys, young guys get in trouble in the community, you know, and go to jail, he catches them and turns them to entrepreneurs,
Farmers market.
And I think he's a genius, right? I try to get him on the show, but the thing is like, you know, he's only interested in solutions, man.
I heard that.
Sometimes we wrap ourselves up in the problems, and we talk about the problems all day long, but we never get to the solutions. All right? You know, the biggest issue, like I said last time I was on the show, is our families. Our families and economics. If you get take care of the family, take care of the economics, everything will take care of itself, right? So solutions, right? I'm in the community. A lot of companies don't have a way to sell online. So I created a platform called Mango Air. That's Mango like the fruit, AIRE.com.
Right, Mango.
To help people who might not have, you know, thousands of dollars to sell them online. So,
my brother, I'm gonna have to cut you. I'm sorry, we are just about out of time, but we'll pick this discussion up next week, and hopefully, brother Warren and the team will join us again next week. But we are out of time. Stan, you got any last words? We got about 30 seconds or so. Sorry for cutting you off, brother. If I didn't get to you, sorry. 6065. Sorry about that. Stan, what you got?
Those of us that know what to do, we got to do it. Let's not just talk about it. Let's do it. Let's create models that we can reduplicate.
All right, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. It is up to us to do the work of working on ourselves today and every day. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment.
Ah,
motivation.
In a little tent, oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.